This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we're talking about Wicked, Part 1.
Part 1.
Part 1.
Yeah. Part one, yeah.
Part one.
It's a pretty trend, a whole bunch of two-parters in the movie industry. I mean, we got Dune, but it is weird that they're doing part one, I gotta say. I love Wicked. I've seen the stage musical a few times. I just love the set design, the songs, and I love Elphaba's and Glinda's relationship in that stage production. But the one thing that I was worried about was, like, how are they gonna translate this into a film?
Well, that's interesting because I haven't seen the stage play. It's actually coming to Manchester very soon, and I am seeing it on Boxing Day on the 26th of December, almost in exactly a month, and I'm very excited. If anything, this film made me more excited to see it. For me, it wasn't a case of how do they adapt the original musical, because obviously I don't really have any frame of reference. It was how do we come close to capturing the technicolor glory of the yes. original Wizard of Oz. I mean, the Wizard of Oz is almost like the modern day center of fantasy. So many things that we equate to fantastical cinema can be traced back to The Wizard of Oz. It is no small feat. It is no easy task to make something in that universe, whether it's Oz the Great and Powerful or Return to Oz or The Wiz or any of the many adaptations of that world. This had a very difficult task. And then to make it two parts, two films that are taking, I think the stage show is like 2.5 hours,
yes,
both parts
which is
together.
Insane.
And now we have part one, which is 2.5 hours on its own. And so we are expanding. We are really trying to make a spectacle out of this. How did you think it did?
It was all right. I mean, I prefer the stage musical because when you watch musicals in the theater, you have no sense of time because you're being manipulated by the presence of the stage and you just get to know about the characters, get to know about the universe in 2 hours and you get an interval and then you think about it. Now, onto here, I gotta say the pacing, it was trying to feel complex, this world of Oz. It was trying to expand a lot of things for the characters, which I felt was very overwhelming. To like, okay, we're focused on this one, we're focused on this. And the reason why the stage musical worked is because you were just getting information bit by bit by bit. Here, it was just like a task in 2 hours and 40 minutes to try to get through everything. I just think the pacing was just like, oh, okay. But however, I gotta say the musical sequences were really good. I really enjoyed them. The choreography was amazing. I loved the singing. I thought it was all right how they translated it.
It's interesting because when you put something on stage, you can get away with about 15 people on the stage and they're all doing different things and they all have their own little stories going on. You can get away with a much faster pace almost moving between them.
Yes.
Whereas a film, you can't really do that. And so it does kind of demand a bit more focus on each one. Again, I don't know what was more focused on than the musical, but I definitely did feel the pacing of this one. You definitely do feel like this is the first half that they've kind of stretched to its maximum. And that will differ person to person depending on their familiarity with it all. But I agree with you. The place that this film really comes alive is the music and the performances. I think we have a pretty perfect cast here. Wicked is one of the most famous and one of the most commercially successful musicals of all time on stage. And it's one of the few where I feel like the two main actors became really, really famous, right? Like, you can't really say that for something like Phantom of the Opera or for, you know, Cats. Not to say it's never been done before, but I have watched all of Glee. I understand the impact of these two people. Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel as Glinda and Elphaba. Incredible, incredible. And so to recast those roles, that is difficult to do. And I think Cynthia Erivo as Elphaba and Ariana Grande as Glinda are perfect. I think they are both amazing. They do a fantastic job acting, singing, all of the stuff that you want from those characters. They do it. And the cast in general is amazing. Jeff Goldblum as the Wizard is an inspired choice. Michelle Yeoh is fantastic. Jonathan Bailey is great. throughout, brilliant cast, but those two at the center of it, Cynthia Erivo, Ariana Grande, amazing. They embody their parts so well.
Yeah, I love their performances, especially Ariana Grande as Glinda. She really took on the role as this popular girl, but then slowly begins to understand about Elphaba and then about the world as well, how it affects people as well. But I gotta say, their chemistry is so infectious on screen, and I love how the movie does that throughout, and there wasn't really a moment that was wasted between them. You just get to slowly see them develop, which I gotta give credit, because it's like, how do you do that in a movie where a stage does it so quickly? But here with Cynthia Erivo and then Ariana Grande, their chemistry worked together beautifully. That was the thing that kind of kept me going throughout. I loved it.
Yeah, there's a lot of elements. Something might happen, you go, oh yeah, that's a thing, because the film is kind of trying to set up so many characters and so many different elements to this world. It does dance around so much, and you can kind of feel a little bit like, oh, hold on, what's good? But when they focus on those two, it is just perfect. I think my favorite musical sequence may have been What Is This Feeling? The song where they realize that they both hate each other and they're both trying to make each other's life the worst. I think that was where the direction was the best in a musical number. I think that was where those two really shone. And I really enjoyed their dynamic and going from that to going from them becoming friends and then also like the kind of breaking at the end. It's really great. And I wish some of the other elements were kind of stripped away so we could focus more on that, because that is so very good. The idea of this film being so much about discrimination and privilege, I really think that that is an interesting dichotomy to play with. I've seen so many different opinions about the casting of these two actors and is it going to work? Is it not going to work? And some fans of the musical say, no, these are terrible ideas. But honestly, taking them as they are, I think they work perfectly in this film with this tone. The tone really nicely balances the playful high school side and then like the really serious themes of discrimination, particularly with the animals. There were some times when you really begin to consider stuff that hits hard.
Yeah. It just reflects everything about the world, how voices are being completely stripped away and how we tend to fight back in protest.
It's a really interesting idea that voices give you power. The idea of a voice is what gives you your own individuality. It gives you your own power. It gives you your own freedom. That is fascinating and really, really interesting how they play with that throughout this film.
For animals as well, because we don't really think about animals' voices in the real world. And like, there's some endangered animals as well. What if they have voices? We love animals. That was such an empowering theme, as this is a musical as well, to think about like voices are something that Elphaba can do with it. And you can definitely see that at the end of the movie where the singing comes into play and it just enhances that theme even more. And I like that Jeff Goldblum counteracts with that whole thing with the voices as well, because he's just a simple guy who's just a magician and trying to deceive the whole public. You know, he's a powerful man, but not really. He only has that voice. So yeah, there's loads to think about with Oz and think about like the whole world in this. I wish there was more things to explore, but then it's just like that dragging onto different things as well. So that was one of the things that we could have explored.
Yeah, I feel like we focus on characters that I feel are totally irrelevant. I did enjoy Jonathan Bailey as whatever his character is called. What's he called?
Like Five-O?
Five-O? Papa?
Five-O, Papa.
Yeah. Like Fissero or something.
Fivero?
Yeah. Whatever his name
Bill,
is.
Bill, it's me.
Ned? Ned Ryerson? Bill Karnes? Whatever his character's name is, I feel like he was completely irrelevant. I didn't care about that kind of romance. Maybe it becomes more important in the second part. I have been told that it does. But we don't spend enough time with Michelle Yeoh to feel something when her character gets those emotional moments. Same with the wizard. We don't really get enough. We get like one real scene with him before we hit the climax of the film, in which I feel like he is fairly important. There's a really great bit where the wizard says the one thing that can bring people together more than anything is a villain. That's a fascinating idea. And I was listening to Mark Kermode talk about this just after I watched the film, and he said, isn't it insane that this film is hit now when that sentiment of unifying people by giving them a common enemy is something that we can see in all different parts of the world, different walks of life, and throughout history? I mean, that's a really, really interesting thing. I wish this film went so much deeper into those ideas, because that's a really, really interesting thing to think about.
Yes, as this is a two-parter, it doesn't really make sense, because you could have focused on those themes thinking about an enemy. And this is called Wicked, for example, like how we think about villains and how people come together to fight against the villain, like in The Wizard of Oz, you know, how Dorothy and the gang fight against the Wicked Witch. And it's something to consider, and also to think about different perspectives. I do not want to compare, but I want to talk about like Dune and Two Parties, like how they successfully worked. Why did Dune work in this example? Dune worked because of how it gave us an understanding how complex Dune was, the world of Arrakis, and how we understand the different groups of people. That worked. We have like something to understand about. But here, you don't really need to stretch out everything for this movie. You could have just done one movie. If this was like 3 hours and it was only one story, great. You could have done a lot of things to explore more, like maybe take out some stuff that's relevant to the story. But I'm also worried about like how they're going to continue the hype as well from part one to part two.
Part two has already been filmed, which yes. is really good for them, because they can just knock it out next year. But obviously the marketing push for this film has been pretty massive. If this film doesn't do well, they're going to have such a uphill battle next year
yes.
to get that second film, to get people interested. Part ones in Hollywood are really interesting, because people kind of, you know, after Deathly Hallows, Breaking Dawn, Mockingjay, people kind of got this expectation that, why do I want to watch part one? Because part two is the one that's going to be the big one, the exciting one. And I don't think that's fair. I think part ones, they are really important. You got to set everything up for everything else to crumble down. I just listed a lot of examples. Not all of them were worth being split up. You know,
yeah,
The Hobbit
didn't
need to be three movies. Breaking Dawn, Mockingjay didn't need to be two. But I think Deathly Hallows is a great example of something where splitting up was a great idea. Dune is another brilliant example of that. And I think that this one kind of works. They obviously didn't market this as part one, which is very clever on their part,
yes.
because nobody would have seen it otherwise. Case in point, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, part one. It's no longer called part one now, because nobody wanted to.
We lost it. We shouldn't have been called part two.
Yeah, but nobody wanted to commit to that. And so like, you can see that coming in at the beginning. The credits say Wicked part one, and you can kind of feel it, you know, the idea of like, ah, we tricked you. Obviously, those of us who knew, but I think largely, as much as the cast works, the music works, the choreography, the sets are incredible.
Yes.
So much practicality. If you look at what they built, obviously they showcase it up in the films, but if you look at any behind the scenes images or videos, it's phenomenal. They built so much of this, and you can see so much of that on screen. The costumes, oh my God. They had embroiderers working so hard to make these beautiful costumes. Did they over-design Elphaba's hat? Yes, but doesn't matter, because the rest of it looks so good. I'm so thrilled about all of that.
Yeah.
But the big thing for me, when you're making a musical, it's not just as easy as having characters sing. It's not about that. It's about creating this reality where everything is heightened, where words hit harder and light and darkness
yes.
is amplified. I saw Moulin Rouge at the cinema last week, and basically, that's pretty much the gold standard. You need somebody who will make that reality, like Baz Luhrmann, like Damien Chazelle, Paul King, Steven Spielberg, Kenny Ortega. And I feel like there are tons of great examples. And when it comes to this film, John M. Chu, I feel like his direction wasn't quite it. The things that I didn't like about this film overwhelmingly were the color grading, the lighting, the editing. And it's such a shame. It's such a shame, because it lets this film down so much. I talked earlier about The Wizard of Oz, Technicolor Marvel. You look at the finished product of that film, you look at the colors of it, and you look at how iconic that is. This film needs that. You need Emerald City to be blindingly green. You need the Yellow Brick Road to be insanely bright. You need the contrast between the pinks and the greens. You don't feel that. So much of this film is in shadow. So much of this film is backlit, where the sun is shining on the actors' faces. And you feel like if you watch this on Boxing Day on TV, you wouldn't be able to see half of what's going on, because it's so ridiculously dark. The lighting isn't doing any favors. The color grading is too dark. It seems like they want to make it dark so they can like mask the CGI, which I get. But really, like it doesn't feel worth that. And I agree with you. The choreography in a lot of the musical sequences were great. But so often it felt like what should have been one shot was 4, when Elphaba sings The Wizard and I, which is her big I Want song, it starts with a conversation between her and Michelle Yeoh, and it's doing a shot reverse shot, which is fine for a conversation in film, but for a musical sequence, really? She's like going across these stones on this river and singing about how much she wants to be somebody, and maybe the wizard can be that chance, and we just keep on cutting, and I want to bang my head against it. Like, you know in La La Land, when they do A Lovely Night, and they do that in one shot, and it's like 4 minutes long. And to be fair, the entire scene's about 7 minutes long, and they filmed that over like a few days, and they could only shoot it 3 times a day, otherwise they would lose the golden hour sunset. That's amazing, and it's beautiful, and it comes out so well. This, it just didn't hit like that, and it just felt like if they had tried something like that, if they'd have been a bit bolder with some of those camera movements, some of those editing choices, I'd put my hands up and I would say this is cinema, but it fell on that hurdle, and I feel that's a crucial thing to not get right.
It was so annoying to see the cinematography just being in very random places. I gotta say, it didn't feel magical. It just felt like I was watching a TV show. And they could have done so much with the lighting in this. It just didn't give depth to maybe Shear's university or the grand scale of Emerald City. They could have done something to add framing into this world. I was really disappointed by the color grading as well. It just completely sucked the life out of it. Like, it was just so dull gray, and you could have done so many possibilities with that. Like the trailers, oof. I was like, oh no.
Yeah, I saw the trailer so many times. Like, for weeks and weeks I saw the trailer, and I basically saw the entire film. Yeah, I wish that it wasn't what it looked like it was going to be, but it was, and that is a shame. Let's get into spoilers, though, because
yes,
I want to talk about a big reason that they gave. I can't remember if it was the director or the writer, but they were talking about making this two parts, and they said it's really difficult to move on from Defying Gravity. Defying Gravity is made to be the first act closer. It's meant to have the curtains close on that song. It's meant to be a triumphant thing to end the audience on whilst we have the intermission. And after watching the film, I think that was an amazing idea, because as much as I'm not massively on board with the two-part thing, the ending of this film was pretty spot on. Throughout, the musical sequences were pretty solid. As I say, I really enjoyed What Is This Feeling. I wasn't mad on Popular, which is a bit of a shame because I do like that song. But Defying Gravity, they nailed it. Again, visually, whatever. It didn't look great, but emotionally, the music was amazing. You know, the score was co-written by John Powell. Amazing. The music was just brilliant, and the performances were amazing. And Cynthia Erivo's vocals, oh my God, they nailed it. And I don't know how much of that is because the song is so good and how much of that is what the film does with it, because the film doesn't do much with it. But my God.
It was a beautiful ending, I gotta say. Like, that voice, when you hear it in cinemas, that's like the reason to watch this in the cinemas, because of the singing. But oh my God, like when you hear that peak of that song, it's just like, wow, that was absolutely worth it to watch all of that. And it's like, okay, I can see why they've done this. This is kind of smart to close on that.
When they hit the To Be Continued, it's not quite the hit of, like, you know, it's not Spider-Verse, it's not Back to the Future.
But everyone just gasp.
but it was a brilliant note to end it on, and you do kind of think, like, if they hadn't got these two actors, this wouldn't have worked. There's actually a really, really delightful sequence where they go to Oz for the first time, and there's a cameo from Kristen Chenoweth and Idina Menzel, and they both get little moments. Like, Idina Menzel gets to do the massive, like, she gets to do the big yell, and they both get little moments with Glinda and Elphaba. That's delightful. I love paying homage to the original. You know, that's a new song as well. Really, really fun. It was good they didn't end, like, because the beginning of the film, they do the whole, like, the Wicked Witch is dead thing, and then we transition from that to the past. I found that a bit of an awkward framing device. Yes. Like, I thought the beginning was really like, yay, the witch is dead. Hey, but what if she was a child once? Anyway, back to the witch is dead. Hey, but I went to school with her, and it felt really clunky.
It's the narrative structure that was just very out of place. It's just like, why show us that, but then go into that?
Exactly.
They could just opened with maybe at the start of Elphaba's life.
Yeah, there's got to be better ways to do it. And I was really worried they wouldn't end it on Defying Gravity. I thought they were going to end it on, like, Glinda in the future being like, man, what fun adventures we have here in Oz.
We don't have time anymore. You know, like, imagine Princess Bride. Just like, just couldn't continue a chapter. Like, oh, sorry, there's a lost chapter in here. I guess we'll have to continue another day. That would be horrifying to like, oh, I just spent 2 hours and 40 minutes not to see Defying Gravity. I mean, you did get to see it in cinemas at the trailers.
Oh my God. You
know, that song.
The trailers literally ruined every part of this film. I can't even like...
Yes, exactly. Like, this just showed the entire movie. It was like, oh, okay.
I think this film at the end of the day was fun, just not nearly as good as it could have been. What are you going to give Wicked out of 10?
I got to say, I'm going to give it a 7. I'm feeling positive today. I like it. I like it.
It's been snowing. It's a positive time. I'm going to give it a 6. Thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you enjoyed it, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week, it's another musical. It's Moana 2, which I have no idea what to expect.
I haven't seen the first one, so I might just educate myself.
Yeah, you gotta do it. You gotta do it. Fun movie. But you can send us an email about Moana 2. Let us know your thoughts. Email us at outoftimefilmpod@gmail.com. We're recording next Saturday, so let us know your thoughts on Moana 2 by then. Around it on the podcast next week.
Yeah, so you can follow us on Instagram at outoftimefilmpod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Aswell. On Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to Al Jensmeyer for the excellent theme and Roland Phillips for vocals as always. And I think that's everything.
See you next year for part 2.
Yeah. Jake, what are you giving?
Give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.